Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, Jasmine Guillory discusses her romance novel, The Wedding Party, with writer and poet Diamond Sharp. This conversation was recorded live at the American Writers Museum in July of 2019. Quick programming note, this discussion contains explicit language and references to sex. It is a romance novel after all. Listener discretion is advised. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
So that being said, I just want to introduce our program for tonight. And, you know, most stories are told by writers in this museum are actually love stories, whether in the romance genre or not. Meetings and partings, courtships and marriages, these tales tell us how we relate to one another and the ways we push to change one another. Our romance novelists are some of America's most widely read and most admired writers. When PBS asked the country to vote for its favorite book, a romance, Outlander, won the second place spot, second only to Kill a Mockingbird. So tonight, we're here to talk about one of those love stories, and we get to welcome Jasmine Guillory, the New York Times bestselling author of The Wedding Date, The Proposal, and now The Wedding Party. Her work has appeared in Cosmopolitan, Real Simple, Oprah Magazine, and Shondaland.com. And Reese Witherspoon selected The Proposal for the inaugural session of her book club, and Entertainment Weekly called her one of romance's brightest new voices. So she is here tonight in conversation with Diamond Sharp, who is a poet and essayist from Chicago. Diamond has performed at Stage 773, and her work has been heard on Chicago Public Radio and read in the New York Times Magazine, New York, Vice, Pitchfork, Rookie, and many other outlets. And I want to thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Everyone.
Thank you. Thank you all so much for coming. I'm going to start out by reading just a little bit from the book, and then Diamond and I are going to talk, and then you guys can ask some questions. I am going to read a little bit from a few chapters into the book. It is, if you don't know about The Wedding Party, it is about Maddie and Theo, who are Alexa's two best friends from the wedding date. They start accidentally sleeping together towards the beginning of the book, and they keep swearing that they're never going to do it again, and then the scene I'm going to read is from Alexa's engagement party, where they see each other again after a while. Maddie set the food down in the living room and escaped as soon as she could to the bathroom. She needed to stay away from Theo. Fine, yes, okay, she'd worn this dress tonight because she knew it looked fantastic on her, and she wanted him to see her looking so great, but she hadn't really thought about what it would do to her when he looked at her like that. If he was so definite they shouldn't sleep together again, why the hell did he look at her like that? It wasn't fair. No one should be able to reject a woman and then stare at her like he wanted to eat her up like one of the appetizers. She was making too big a deal out of seeing him again. This was going to be fine. They hadn't seen each other in a while. Of course, they both maybe think about things. But she'd go back out there and the rest of the party would be normal and they wouldn't interact at all. And they wouldn't have to see each other again for months, maybe even years. She needed another glass of champagne. That's what she needed. She checked her makeup in the mirror, washed her hands, and ventured out of the bathroom. Maddie spent the next hour eating the delicious snacks that kept coming out of the kitchen, drinking champagne, and lightly flirting with two of Drew's doctor friends. Alexa was all over the place, talking to her friends and family. It was nice to see her so happy. Maddie had been a little suspicious of Drew in the beginning. A pretty boy doctor from Los Angeles, of all places, was no one's idea of a stable guy for their best friend, but he made Alexa so happy that he'd won her over. Finally, Alexa walked up to their group with a bottle of champagne. Refill? My mom insists on doing a toast, so everyone needs some champagne now to be prepared. Maddie held out her glass for Alexa to fill. So, Alexa, have you jumped into wedding planning yet? Drew's friend Adam asked. Do we have a date? Alexa laughed and shook her head. Oh, God, no. I have a few spreadsheets other people have sent me of how they did it, but just looking at them made my eyes glaze over. All I know so far is that my sister is my maid of honor, and Maddie here and my friend Theo, you guys have met him, the guy in the glasses over there, are both in the wedding party. Work has been too crazy these past few weeks for me to think about anything else, but I'm sure it'll come. I'm relying on Maddie to help out a lot with the whole dress situation. Did she just say Theo was also in the wedding party? The same Theo? Yes, it had to be. She pointed at him. Theo's in the wedding party, too? She hoped her voice didn't sound as alarmed as she felt. Oh, yeah, didn't I tell you? Alexa beckoned Drew over. I asked him tonight. He's going to be a bridesman, which is a very silly-sounding word, but then so many wedding-related words are ridiculous. So much for that thing about not seeing him for months or more. She'd be seeing him constantly now, for like the next year. Maddie pasted a smile on her face.
Thank you. Okay, I am so excited to talk about this book. So I read this book in like 2 days. I couldn't put it down. Like I was on the bus to work being like, okay, let me get it together and read a bit more. So yeah, let's get this started.
All right.
I am so fascinated by this wider world of like the wedding date, right? So like we always get to peek in with each book, a new character from a previous storyline. So can you talk a bit about that? Like why you chose to kind of set this up as a wider universe?
You know, it was partly intentional, partly not. Like when I wrote The Wedding Date, there were certainly other characters that I wanted to explore that, you know, I kind of knew a little bit about Maddie and Theo's story already as I was writing. But I mean, The Wedding Date was my first book. Like when I wrote it, I didn't know it was going to come out. I wasn't sure if I was going to get to write other books set in this universe at all. And so it's just been really fun to go back and revisit people and to be able to come up with stories that I felt fit them. Like when I knew I loved Carlos in The Wedding Date, but people asked me, like people who read early versions of the manuscript, like, is Carlos going to get his own book? And at that point, I actually didn't have an idea for Carlos. And I knew I liked him and I thought it would be fun to write something about him, but I kept sort of brainstorming things and none of them seemed right for him. And then in the summer of 2016 for that Olympics, there were a lot of public proposals at the Olympics. And one of them was like, someone had just won a medal and her boyfriend jumped out of the stands to propose to her. And I was like, let her have her moment. Like, she just won an Olympic medal. Can't you wait for, like, dinner afterward tonight? And so I remember thinking, I wonder what would happen if someone said no on one of these. And then I was like, oh, that would be the person to hook up with Carlos. Like, and so, but it takes a while sometimes to think of the right story for the right character. So I'm glad I've just gotten to be able to keep writing them.
So tell us about Maddie. Maddie just seems like a really interesting character. She is kind of thinking about breaking off into her own fashion thing. She has a history of kind of, she can be a bitch, but she's a reformed one. So I was kind of curious about, you know, why her and Theo? Why those two characters for this one?
So the first chapter in this book is a chapter that happens about a third of the way into the wedding date. It is Theo's birthday party. Alexa drags Maddie along with her. Drew happens to be at that bar, and they kind of reunite then. Well, when I wrote that chapter in the wedding date, you know, that was the first time I had Maddie and Theo interact in the book, and I knew parts about each of them as I was writing, but as soon as I had them interact, I was like, these two are going to hook up later tonight. And so, I knew that they were attracted to one another, even though they didn't want to be. But I didn't, you know, I wrote, like, the first paragraph of this book, maybe a few months after I finished writing The Wedding Date, and then I didn't end up going back to be able to write it for a year or two, I think. So it was fun to be able to revisit this book and to think more about Maddie. You know, when I had written The Wedding Date, I thought a lot about Maddie in relationship to Alexa, because she's Alexa's best friend, and like the relationship that they have and what she did to help her friend. But it was fun to get to think about Maddie as a whole person on her own and what her motivations were, why she had gotten into the fashion business in the first place, and why she cared so much about it. And so she was a really fun character to write. She was, you know, very unlike me in some ways and then a lot like me in other ways. And I think it was fun to like be able to let her rant about things that she cared about. And sometimes, you know, kind of that when I just kind of let a character rant, a lot of that ends up getting cut from the first draft, but I keep a little bit of it in. That tells me a lot about a character, like what they care about, why they care about what they care about. And so she was really fun to explore.
Well, what about Theo then? Where does he kind of fit into this?
Well, so Theo is very different from Maddie, which I thought, you know, it was exciting to be able to look at two people who were so different. Theo is very uptight. He, you know, he has had kind of a career path that he has kept his feet on the whole time. He works really hard. He is pretty nerdy. But he also has kind of a more fun side that he doesn't let a lot of people see. And so it was fun to be able to get Maddie and Theodore relaxed together, which took a little bit while for them to get to know each other. But, you know, I liked Theo from the beginning because Theo was another good friend of Alexa's. They worked really well together. They became good friends because of that. And I was excited to get to write his story.
Another thing I was really interested by was the fact that, so all these characters are in the Bay Area. You are a Bay Area native. All these folks kind of work in city government or something related to that. And I thought that was interesting to talk about the Bay Area and seem to purposely not talk about tech, et cetera, et cetera. And it seemed like the books also kind of serve as a love story to San Francisco and to Oakland. And I think that's really interesting. Why did you choose to kind of have these folks be people that work in city government, work in local organizations? Like, why that?
You know, partly was because from my own background, like as a little bit of writing what you know, I have never, I've never worked exactly in city government, but I've worked around it a lot. And I have a lot of respect for people who do a lot of the, like, you know, I think like the national politics gets a lot of the attention, but local politics is a lot of what determines how people live. And so it, like, I liked exploring that, look, you know, paying attention to the people who do a lot of the hard work around, you know, especially like the, you know, poor people in their city, the people who need the most help, like local government are the ones who do all that work and who know all of the details. And so, and I've, you know, I've done some political work myself as well in kind of a variety of different things. And so, and I've always really respected the people who do that kind of work. And so it was fun to really, you know, shine a light on them to a certain extent, but then also see what fun things can I kind of get out of this for fiction.
Cool. Another part of this book, which is fun, is the fact that it's happening, all of the action's happening with the backdrop of Alexa's wedding. And I found it very unique that you chose to have all this drama happening with kind of very little mention of the wedding that's happening. It comes up, but all the drama that's kind of being moved forward is with Theo and Maddie, not necessarily Alexa and Drew. And we know that being part of a wedding party can be its own little...
its own thing.
Its own, its own thing. I'm currently part of a wedding party, and I am spent. I cannot wait for it to be over. But it seems like a unique choice to choose to have that and you know, and not harp on kind of the cliches of a wedding party, which is like the bridezilla or all the stress and drama that comes along with that. So was that kind of in the original like revisions of this work and thinking about this discussions of this work, were you thinking, this could be a cool space to kind of like work out a romance, like in the back as you're figuring out like your friends making the choice and you're kind of going along for the ride?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think weddings are just so interesting, especially for the relationships around them, because everyone has heightened emotions around weddings, because there's so much going on there, whether it's family or friends, people's expectations of you, you know, the whole like bridezilla thing. A lot of that is like, everyone gets mad at women, no matter what we do. And everyone gets mad at brides, no matter what they do, you know, cause it's either like, you're not doing all these things you're supposed to do, or like you're doing all the traditional things. Shouldn't you be doing it more cool? And I think, you know, I think that often there's no way for like a bride to win because everyone's criticizing her no matter what she does. And so I found that kind of interesting to see how the people in the wedding party would kind of come together to support Alexa. But also I didn't, you know, I wrote a book about Alexa. I didn't want her to be the star of this story. But I wanted to see like what their emotions were, what Maddie and Theo's emotions were around their best friend getting married. What that, you know, what that does to a relationship with your friend. Cause sometimes you can kind of feel a little sad, even though you're happy for your friend, you know, that changes your relationship. And so there's always so many fun things to mine around weddings. And so I had a lot of fun with that. And I've been in a lot of weddings, for some of you who are here. And so that I got some good bits out of those experiences of my life too.
It didn't also seem like it could be kind of, you know, hard to kind of start a new relationship, particularly with someone else in the bridal party. And that seemed like a really fun and juicy space to kind of create this drama. You know, in your many times of being a bridesmaid, is that something that you've seen happen? Like, what kind of inspired that space as being the jump off of this drama.
Oh, I've seen so many hookups at weddings, let me tell you. So that was definitely part of it. I mean, I think people, you know, people get like, they're, when you're at weddings, like everyone is thinking about love and thinking about, you know, what comes next and your own experiences and your own background and like what you want. And so that I think it's a perfect space to like lead into either a new relationship or just a fun night.
Right. Okay. So outside of all this, what I really like about your writing is that you're a foodie and it shows up in your writing. Like very often I've been reading your book late at night and been like, maybe I should get some pizza. Like it's midnight, but like I can order. I can order some pizza. And you're so specific in the things, in the type of foods that you write about. So the toppings, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm kind of curious to know, what kind of pizza do you like?
You know, I mean, my default pizza order is just pepperoni, but sometimes I can add things to that. I do like mushrooms, although they have to be treated right. Sometimes if you put raw mushrooms on a pizza, they just get weird and soggy. You have to cook them first. I like black olives. I know that can be kind of, people can have strong feelings on either side of the olive situation. I also sometimes enjoy vegetables on my pizza. There's a good spinach pizza at a place near me that I like a lot. But yeah, I can, and then some, you know, sausage. I mean, I there are a lot of pizza toppings that I like. I do like roasted garlic on pizza.
I just find that so.
You need to try it. You haven't tried it. I think you might like it.
Why try something if I know that I might not like it? But I would do it. I will keep an open
yeah,
mind.
Yeah, keep an open mind.
And I will find myself some pizza with roasted garlic on it, and I will report back.
Okay, please do report back.
Do you have like a recipe that you keep on hand? Like, is there something that you can really make that, you know, if it comes down to it, someone's coming over, and you're like, nope, I can bust out this spaghetti or whatever.
Well, you know, I have a lot of dessert recipes that are go-tos. There are a lot of like basic food recipes that I make. There's a like pasta puttanesca is one of my favorites because a lot of all of that stuff is something that you can just have in your pantry and I don't have to have been to the store recently. So it's a very quick sauce. I can throw it all together. It has a lot of garlic in it. So you need to have, you know, someone coming over who you like because you're both eating a lot of garlic. But then there are a lot of cake recipes that I can quickly throw together because I tend to have a lot of, my pantry is usually very full of anything I can use to bake with in case I need to procrastinate for some reason, I can bake cake.
And then there's also a really, like, we all know this, there's a connection to romance and food, right? That, like, when you're dating someone and getting to know someone, food often plays a role in that. And so I'm just kind of curious, like, what's your favorite, like, date night food?
You know, I'm a big fan of a delicious cheese plate, which Alex and Drew ate a lot of cheese and crackers in the wedding date. But I think that it's a fun way to, like, you don't have to make a big thing. It's just a lot of buying good cheese and putting stuff out there. You can have all sorts of different, like, jams and crackers and nuts to put on there. Maybe some prosciutto. Yeah.
You're very fancy. Okay, I'm gonna take a note.
Yeah, take some notes.
So when writing the sex scenes, that is also, obviously, this is a romance novel. There are many ways in which you can, like, really fuck them up and be cliche, and you don't do that. So I'm really curious about what it takes to write a good sex scene.
You know, something that I think about a lot in that is making sure that both characters have agency in what they're doing, that they're both like fully engaged and excited about it, and that they're checking in with the other person. Either like sometimes they're checking in verbally and sometimes it's like they're not saying it out loud, but they're making it clear that, you know, they want to know that the other person is still excited, engaged by what's happening. And so that's, I think, the core of like writing a good sex scene is like having both characters be excited and want what's going on, and, you know, make it clear to the reader that they do too. Because there are certain times when, like, you know, you can especially in a book like this where you're flipping back and forth between points of view, you know, you can write something from one person's point of view that makes it clear that, like, if someone's pushing you up against a wall, for example, you want to write that from the point of view of the person who's getting pushed up against the wall so you can say, like, and I was excited about that. Do you know what I mean? Like, so that it's not like, oh, okay, he just pushed her up against the wall. Does she want that? Like, that could be a little, so it does, like, those are things I think about too. Like, thinking about point of view is something that I pay a lot of attention to, because you want to, when you're in someone's head, you want to know, like, they like what's going on. And I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah, and I noticed that you did a good job of, like, giving us the view of both. Like, is that something that you kind of had to sit down and when you're writing these notes, I think about, okay, this is happening to one party, and so therefore in the next chapter I'll talk about with the other party. Like, how do you kind of...
I don't consciously think about it, maybe not in the first draft, but I do, when I'm going back and revising, I do think, you know, if most of them have been from one side, I will flip it for some of them, because I do want to kind of have that balance. And to make sure you're getting to know both characters and their, I mean, because, you know, it is a romance novel. You want to make it clear that, like, these two people are falling in love. And so you want to be able to be in each person's head enough to make it clear that those emotions are there too.
Right. And then I was also kind of thinking again, like, who has inspired you when you're thinking about, like, these romance scenes as well? Are there, like, any writers that you're kind of thinking about that you're keeping kind of in the back of your mind when you're writing out these scenes, or you're just kind of writing out, I guess, these plot lines at large, but also then particularly thinking about the sex scenes? Is there anyone that you're like, you know what, this person does it really well, and I hope to do that?
You know, there are a lot of, like, I read a lot of romance novels before I started, I read a lot of romance novels before I started writing one, and I think I got a lot out of a number of the people who I thought were really great at it, and then I read a lot of people who I did not think were great at it, and it made me think, like, okay, this is what I don't want to do. So those are, you know, that was really helpful. I mean, I think it's great as a writer to read books that you don't like, because it makes you realize, like, this is the opposite of how I want to do this. And so that, you know, there are a number of great romance writers who I've looked to. I think I've tried very hard not to specifically emulate anyone, but when I've seen things that, you know, that I've thought, like, oh, she did that well, it kind of sticks in my head a little bit. I love Tessa Dare's books. I love Courtney Milan's books. Ruby Lang, her books are wonderful. I love how she explores, you know, both the sex scenes, but also, like, the ways that, you know, people's jobs play a role in their relationships. And I think those are some of the first people that I really thought about that when I started to write.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, thank you. Going back to, like, thinking about people's jobs, again, like, you did a really good job, I think, of kind of giving these people, like, it felt real to me that someone's walking into City Hall that day, or someone's walking into a meeting with a stylist or with a style client and going forth with that. When you're, like, thinking about character development, are you kind of writing out, like, this person will do this and this person will do that? Or does that kind of go with the flow as you're kind of taking the first few paragraphs of the novel?
That, you know, I tend to, so when I start writing a book, I always start with an outline, but a lot of times I diverge from it a lot as I keep writing. So sometimes I have scenes that I plan to write that as I keep writing, you know, in the first, like, third of the book, I realize, oh, that character would never do that. And then I have to kind of, refigure out how I'm going to work out the rest of the book, or how they're going to, how a certain situation, you know, a character is going to react to it. So I do, a lot of times my first draft is me figuring out the characters and who they are as people. And so that really affects a lot of the plot too, because, you know, once I know a little bit more of who they are, then I know if certain things that I've planned for will even work or not.
Right. And when you're kind of thinking about, again, these characters in the wider universe, do you already have a kind of system in mind about who you might spotlight next?
Well, next is Maddie's mom, who you meet in the wedding party. She had in my next book, Royal Holiday, which comes out October 1st, she goes to England with Maddie. Maddie gets hired to style a member of the royal family. You can just imagine who that might be. And Maddie's mom, Vivian, goes along with her because Maddie and her mom are really close. She doesn't want to spend Christmas without her mom. And in the course of that little trip, Vivian has a little romance with the Queen's private secretary.
I'm really waiting for, like, sorry, to, like, have mom get some action. Mm-hmm. I just think that's,
yeah,
that's going to be great. And the Vivian character seems really endearing, like, just to what you see of her in this novel. So I'm curious to, like, see what she's like when she's, like, out there in England living her best life.
Yeah. Yes.
But do you think about, like, okay, we're doing Vivian next, you know, this other character, like, they might make a, like, how do you kind of think to yourself, like, this person might make a great book by themselves?
Partly it's if I have a lot of fun writing them, Okay. Then I think, like, oh, I could write a whole book about them. But sometimes, it, you know, like I said with Carlos, sometimes there are characters who I had a lot of fun writing, but I don't know how I would write their story yet. So sometimes I just kind of have to wait, for that to come to me or do some brainstorming about it. There are some people who I had kind of initially thought I would write one kind of story about them and then changed it around. So that, you know, that definitely takes a little bit of brainstorming on my part. And sometimes it's, you know, chatting with my agent and my editor about, like, what do they think? Do they think this would work? And, like, will I have fun writing it? I had a conversation with my editor recently because I was kind of thinking about what I wanted to write next. And I'd given her a few ideas. And then we hadn't really figured out, like, you know, what order they would be in. And so I asked her, do you have strong feelings about that? And she said, I want you to write next what you're most excited about writing. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that helps. So I think, you know, whatever I'm most excited about writing, if I have a great idea that I can't wait to dive into, then that's what I start working on.
I also really like the language. I don't know, like, so I think people here have read the books. I feel like when I'm reading these books, like, I'm kind of like listening and talking to a friend, right? Like, it's just written in such a kind of fun, colloquial language. Like, I just feel like I'm texting your friend and getting all this juicy information about their various hiccups. That's kind of what it feels like, right? That, like, there's this person here that's telling me everything about them. And I just kind of wonder, you know, was that a choice? Because I feel like with writers, sometimes you think to yourself, I must sound like a writer trademark. Like, I have to sound fancy and educated and renowned, and I have to do all this fancy word work here. And I think it's a really good choice to kind of just write the way that is fun.
Yeah, I mean, The Wedding Date was the first book that I published, but it was not the first book I wrote. And so I think I kind of went through some of my growing pains as a writer in some of my early work that was not published, so that's good. And then I think, you know, you start to figure out how it works best for you to write. Like, I just kind of try to write with my own voice and make it seem like something that I would want to say or something that I think works best for my characters to say. And it has to come naturally to me or else it just seems hard and stiff and weird to work on and then I don't want to do it. And so that took a little bit of, you know, that took a little bit of work and, like, figuring that out. But eventually I think I got there.
So in this book, what I think, sorry, I'm collecting my thoughts, but there's, like, a lot that happens as they kind of are entering this kind of secret relationship. And I thought that, like, the will they or won't they was really fun in the beginning, like, because we knew that these characters supposedly hated each other's guts, right? Like, that's what they were telling themselves. That's what they're telling other people actively, regularly. We hate each other, right? But then they entered this relationship and it became, you know, it was a secret. I'm just wondering, like, why choose a secret relationship, like, as opposed to, like, having it out in the open with their friends? Like, what about the secret, like, kind of drives this Doi Ford.
You know, I think it's always fun to explore the things that people keep secret from their friends. Because a lot of times, even your closest friends, either you're scared to tell them some things or you want them to have a certain vision of you. And you know, you don't want them to know one thing, or you don't want, you know, you sort of think like, I don't want to make a big deal out of this, so I'm not going to tell them until, you know, until XYZ happens. You know, if either like, I mean, I've known, you know, sometimes I've like had friends keep pregnancies secret, relationships secret, or like just even they were applying to graduate school and were stressed about it and knew that like if they talked about it to everyone, it would make them more stressed. So they just decided to keep it a secret. And so I think sometimes that's really interesting and says something about like, you as a person, you know, how, like, what are these things that are important to you that enough that you're keeping it a secret, even though you're kind of pretending that it's not important. Like, that's why I'm not talking about it. It's not important at all. And so I think that, like, that was fun for me to explore for both Maddie and Theo.
And what I think is interesting with Maddie and Theo is that they, again, like, the use of, like, texting in front of folks who they think that they're hiding it from, right? Like, yeah, I'm just, can you just talk a bit more about, like, writing about a secret, right? Like, you have to do the things like the secret texting or, like, the you're in my home and you shouldn't be there, but if someone sees you here, they'll know that this cover will be blown. Like, and that seems like it's very fun to write, but then also, like, to think of all the scenarios. Like, how did you come up with all these scenarios in which their cover could be blown?
You know, that, I mean, those parts were really fun to write. I think, there were a lot of things that I either, like, pulled little bits of from friends' lives or from my own life where, you know, you're kind of hiding something and you think, like, oh no, they're going to notice it because of this or that. And so that stuff was all really fun to think about and write about and like kind of figure who are they trying to keep this secret from the most? When do they start sort of forgetting that they're keeping it a secret and then have to remember again? Because I think that happens all the time. And that part was really fun.
I also really like that, both of the characters kind of, they came together when talking about their mothers. And I thought that was a really important note in there to like for them to connect on both of their mothers in various ways that the sacrifice for them. We see more of Vivian. She seems to talk a bit more. It seems like the other mother is out on vacation.
Yeah.
Maybe also living her best life. Yeah. It's unclear when she's out of town.
I like to see some moms living their best lives.
Yeah, she's out there. She's out of town, booked and busy. But that seemed like a purposeful note. Can you just expand a bit more about like why that was a space for them to connect on?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, especially both of these characters are Black. Their moms had single mothers who, sacrificed a lot to raise them. And I thought that was a really interesting way because especially they kind of figure that out about each other early on when they still thought they really hated each other, but that was one thing that made each of them kind of think, I don't know, maybe there's more to this person than I thought. And so it was something for them to bond about, but it was also like, I think something that helped craft their characters because they both realized their mother sacrificed this much for me and also worked so hard for them. And they have tight relationships with their moms and then wanted to like be a success because of that. They wanted to make sure that they were worthy of all of the hard work of their moms. And I think that is something that played a role in both of why each of them did what they did.
And then in the book, one of the mothers kind of picks up on this relationship before without, you know, needing to be told. And quite often, right, our parents or the people around us pick up on things before we tell them, whether, again, we're hiding it from ourselves on purpose or, you know, whatever. Why that? Like, why bring in the point about, you know, the community around them kind of sees this happening? It's kind of letting them figure out on their own. It isn't saying anything, but that seems to be, again, like a purposeful choice about a relationship is two people, but then also other folks are kind of peeking in and kind of can see that things are happening. And That seems kind of important.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they are very close to their families. Their, you know, Maddie's mom plays a big role in this book, as does Theo's brother. And I, you know, wanted to show there's lots of things that your family picks up on about you that you don't tell them, because they often know you the best of anyone, even, you know, even when you're not talking about something, or they can tell specifically because you're not talking about something, why you care about it or what's going on with you. And so that, I think, was interesting to explore and have fun with.
So another part that I thought was funny, I'm trying to say not interesting, I'm trying to use more words. There's a part in there, so Theo was like working on a really big project with his boss, and that takes up a lot of like his, like, just space, in addition to this relationship. And again, that seemed, we kind of, some of that work that he's doing is work that's kind of mentioned in the first book, and that seemed, again, like the continuation of really important community-based work that's happening in the city of either Oakland or San Francisco, outside of what we kind of think of these cities as now, the national conversations about them. And I guess I just wanted you to talk a bit more about why choose things to talk about, you know, pre-K are, again, things that are such a local matter. That obviously, I think people can relate to, but it's like such a specific thing to write about in a backdrop of a romance novel. So why that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I knew going into this book that there was going to be something that Theo was working hard on. That was something that I kind of thought about in thinking about who Theo was as a person, what issues would he really care about? And when I, you know, I think a lot about a lot of different political issues. And so I was, you know, kind of going through and thinking about what Theo would embrace, what he would work hard on, what he would, you know, want, what he would be excited to work for his boss on. And so there's a whole subplot in the book about universal pre-K in California, and how Theo is working with his boss on that. And I knew that, like, especially, you know, we were talking about Theo's relationship with his mom and his brother, and like he knew that that would have been something that would have really helped his mom, and that he thinks a lot about like parents who have small children who can't afford to, you know, put them in all sorts of like different organizations or preschool or this or that, and those are things that he really cares about. And so that, like, kind of thinking through what the things that Theo would care about the most taught me a lot about who he was as a person.
Right. I know that when writing a book, like you said, some things get kind of left out. You have to rearrange, or you write things about characters that are kind of for your own benefit, but like don't necessarily need to make it into a book. Is there anything about the characters, or the general plot line that, you know, you kind of had to leave out, that you still think about, or that you think could be used in something else? Like, is there something?
Not necessarily. I wouldn't use it in anything else, but I did, when I was sort of midway through the first draft in this book, I went back and wrote the first scene, the first time Maddie and Theo met, because I kind of knew that they didn't like each other. I knew it was because of something that happened when they first met. But I was like, I need to actually write that scene for myself. I knew while writing it that this would probably not end up in the book, but I like knew I needed to know, like, to write it out to know exactly how it was and exactly what happened. And I mean, I think it's good that it didn't end up in the book, because they both seem kind of terrible in the scene, which is why they ended up not liking each other. But it also really helped me know more about their characters and know why they both came out of that interaction like, I'm never gonna like this person. And then, you know, and also how they got it wrong. Like, they were both in bad moods. You know, I mean, one person said just the wrong thing, and we've all had those kind of interactions, where then, you know, you realize, like, they both realize much later, maybe I was wrong about that person, but sometimes it takes a while. And so I wrote that for myself, because I knew that I had to work through that and figure out exactly how that happened with them and who they were and you know, how they had grown, because that scene happens – a number of years before this book happens. And so like how they had grown as people in between when that happened and when this book starts.
Yeah, it did seem like a very deep-seated hate.
Yeah.
That was like as a reader, I felt like I was walking into something almost. Like, you know, like you don't have all the information, which is like really good that you know, just by the language you've chosen, that like there is something there that like isn't just like that one time he like said something wrong to me. It's like, no, this guy is a jerk.
Yeah.
And we will never ever like be friends. I think that's just really funny that you're able to kind of imply that again without like having that exact scene in the book.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Please read this book. Like those like watching these two characters kind of like go past like I hate you to I think I may love you, maybe, perhaps, depending upon, like, who I'm talking to. It's, like, just a really fun ride. Outside of this, do you have any, like, favorite kind of scenes in the book? Like, anything that you're, like, when you wrote that, you were, like, typing your, like, yes, this is great.
So there's a scene that I wrote, you know, this book was the hardest of all of my books to write for, I think, a number of reasons. This was sort of the first book that I wrote that I had a book out in the world for when I wrote the proposal. I turned that in before the wedding date came out. And so, I didn't know anyone would read it. I was just writing. And then when I was writing this book, like the wedding date was already out and I was like, oh, people are going to read this book. Oh no. So that felt really harder to write. And so kind of midway through the book, I was kind of getting a little too in my own head about it. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to write a scene. This is not going to end up in the book where they just like hang out in someone's backyard and drink some margaritas just to like bring people together and have them relax. And it'll tell me, you know, it'll make me more relaxed and kind of fall in love with these characters again. And I did. And I really liked writing the scene and I liked it so much that I was like, I'm going to find a way to keep this in the book. So I did, but I had a lot of fun writing that scene and that kind of made me fall in love with the book again.
Are we going to see these characters again?
Well, you'll definitely see Maddie again in Royal Holiday. And then beyond that, maybe.
I'm rooting for them. So
thank you.
I want to see how it plays out.
All right. Perfect.
Yeah.
Time for questions.
I have a question kind of about the logistics of writing. You obviously had a full-time job when you started, and how long did you continue having a full-time job and do you still have one, or are you just writing now?
No,
as
of January, I don't. But I wrote my first three books when I was working full time. So I would usually, for most of them, I wrote at night. So there are some of you here who've known me for a while. You all know that I'm not a morning person. I know people who like get up at 5 a.m. to write. That will never be me. So I would usually come home from work, like make dinner, and then write for anywhere from like 30 minutes to 2 hours at night. I try to, when I'm working on a first draft, write every night, write every day for it. Some people say like you have to write every day to be a writer. That is not a thing I think. I write every day when I'm working on a draft because it helps keep the characters in my head the whole time. Because there's a lot of times when I'm like sort of trying to figure things out. And when I'm writing every day, even if I know that like what I wrote that day is bad and won't make it into the book, it still keeps them alive in my head and keeps the story there so that like sometime midway through the next day, I'll be like, oh, that's it. Because it's still sort of all working there. But So occasionally, like when I was working on the wedding date, that I would often bring my laptop to work with me and like go to Starbucks across the street for 30 minutes or so at lunchtime and then write at night too. For most of them, you know, I write at night or on the weekends and then just kind of, I keep a writing spreadsheet to kind of track my, you know, how many words I wrote that day and, other little things about the writing and then just kind of keep going. I think like a little bit of forward motion every day was the thing that got the books written.
Hello.
Hi.
As the only guy in the room, I have a guy question and then another question. I'll give them to you both quickly. The excuse me. The guy question is, of course, about sex. Mm-hmm. The Hallmark Channel broadcasts a lot of, you know, romantic movies, and they have a rule that there's no sex. And in fact, the couple that's going to get together don't even kiss until the last scene. So that's one approach.
That is not my approach.
And so I was going to ask if you thought there is merit to that approach, or is that just a generational thing? It's an older audience. And my other question is, you've talked about how much you love your characters, very invested in them. And I was wondering if you base them on people you know, or you make them up and they assume a life of their own. Thanks.
I think there are lots, I mean, for your first question, there are lots of different ways to write romances. There are romance novels that like don't even have, that barely have characters hold hands, but it's still about the emotion and them falling in love. There are romance novels that go much farther than mine do. And I think they're all, you know, they can all work well depending on if they're written well, if they have a good story. I mean, I think people go into romances for all sorts of different reasons, and I think it can all be great. For your second question, my characters all, like, they're kind of little bits of them that are often from people I know. But a lot of times it's more the relationship is something that I kind of think about and base a character on. Like the Theo character, I kind of first had the idea for him because I have a close male friend who I was in his wedding. I was a groomsmaid in his wedding. And so his relationship with Alexa is a lot like my relationship with my friend. He is not like, you know, my friend, but I wanted to kind of craft someone who they had those same emotions around. And so that's often a lot of the, when I'm thinking about characters, sometimes I kind of think of something small that sparks an idea for a character, and that's the thing that that makes me bring them to life.
Awesome. Hello.
Hello.
Fellow Wellesley alum.
Thank you for coming.
Of course. So I've read a lot of romance novels in my time. And one of the things I loved that this was actually one of the first books where I connected with the main character, and they weren't, you know, in medieval time in Scotland or something.
Although I like a lot of those books too.
You know, they weren't, you know, off being carried away from their duked, like, father or something. And so, especially as a woman of color, I was like, oh my goodness, I would think like that. I would do that. That's so interesting. I want to read more. So my question for you, is there any specific character in any of your books that you relate closely to, or have we not seen them yet?
I relate closely to many of my characters. Like, a lot of them have a little bit of me in them. Someone about the proposal, I had an event last year where someone asked me, you know, did you make Carlos a domineering older brother because you were making a statement about masculinity? And I was like, no, I am a domineering older sister. And that's why, and I didn't really totally do that on purpose, but it was a relationship I understood, and sort of I knew how to do that. There are things about Maddie that are a lot like me. There are little bits about Alexa that are a lot like me. I think, you know, I put a little bit of myself into each character, but most of my characters aren't me. It's just, you know, little things that that kind of make me happy to throw in there.
Okay, I have a question. It's two-part.
Okay.
One, I love that you get into your character's head, that you write that may not go in the book because you get to know them deeper point of view. Have you ever had to kill your darling because your editor said, I don't like her, and then have you resurrected her into another book or that type of?
No. I mean, there are definitely scenes that I've had to cut. In the wedding date, I have a handful of friends and fellow writers who I send my work out to kind of when I'm at the point where I can't do anything else to it, but I know it still needs some work, so I sent it out to them. I sent the wedding date to them, and I had one friend say about one chapter, like, her whole note was, do you really need this chapter? And I was like, what is she talking about? Yes, I need that chapter. It says all of... Okay, maybe I don't actually need that chapter. But that is also a thing that has helped me, you know, in my subsequent books, because I have running through my head as I do all my revisions, like, do I really need this chapter? And so that is, you know, it makes me, like, when I told the story about writing that margarita scene, like, I I figured out a way to make sure it was a necessary chapter to keep in the book. And so, you know, it sort of makes you realize, like, I wanted the, it has to be something that moves the story forward. And so those are things that have helped me kind of, if there's a darling that I want to keep, I have to figure out a way to keep it and make it make sense. But there've been a lot of things that, you know, scenes that I loved that I'm like, this just isn't right. It's got to go. Which gets a little easier in each book.
Well, she already asked my question, but I just want to say I really appreciate how you write, like, these Black professional characters that all have, like, healthy relationships with their parents and, like, with their friends, and, like, all their friends, like, always hold them accountable and tell them, like, what they need to hear instead of what they want to hear. And it's not always like, I love you so much. And sometimes they're like, I want to kill you. Like, why did you tell me that? And I really liked when Maddie was kind of like, I want to punch the Maddie that told Alexa to, like, go get Drew in her face, because, like, it came to slap her back in her face. So I really liked that.
Thank you. I just had a quick question about The Wedding Date, like, how things started for you, because The Wedding Date was an interracial book. So did you find that to be harder to market, or was there, it's kind of a two-part question, kind of like, was it harder to market out there, to put it out there that this is an interracial, because you don't really see that much genre? And so did it become easier once you got to the proposal and whatnot?
So one of the things that when I had initial conversations with my editor about the cover of The Wedding Date, one of the things that was really important to me was that there was going to be a Black woman on the cover. And it ended up that there was a Black woman and a white man on the cover. I did not care as much if there was a white man on the cover, but I really cared that there was a Black woman on the cover. And so I think the cover made it relatively clear, but still, you never know. It was a book cover actually telling you the truth about what goes in the book. I think the marketing and publicity people at my publisher did an excellent job of, you know, marketing the book in that way and sort of making that clear, but also making it clear that that wasn't the center of the story, which is what I really didn't want to have happen. Like, I did not want them to market it as, like, the hot interracial romance of the summer, you know? Like, that's not what I wanted. And so I was really glad that they... we did a good job in making it clear that this was a love story that was about a Black woman, and there was a white man there too, but, like, that wasn't the core of the story wasn't about, like, you know, the way the races interact, and, like, that wasn't what I wanted.
Hi, further in the back. So you mentioned a little bit earlier, you were saying, like, oh, that you're really rooting for Maddie and Theo. And that kind of made me think of, like, you know, like Disney movies and stuff where it's kind of like, and they lived happily ever after. And so I was wondering, like, with Drew and Alexa and with Nicole and Carlos and a little bit with Maddie and Theo, like, do you think about sort of like where they are now? Or do you kind of like, when you finished writing the book, is it sort of like, and they lived happily ever after? Like, are they still together? Like, what are their problems? That kind of thing.
I definitely do still think about them, you know, partly just for, like, writing reasons, because a lot of times, you know, in each of my books, the characters have kind of turned up again. And so I want to know, like, where are they now? Where might they be in a year? Where might they be in 2 years? If they got married, what kind of wedding would they have? Like, all of that stuff I think about. Partly, you know, usually as I'm finishing a book, but also that keeps coming up in my head as I keep thinking about the book. Because a lot of times, you know, I finish the bulk of the work on The Wedding Party last fall. And so I usually kind of take breaks from thinking about books, and then they come back, you know, then I start having to think about them again, and I get excited to, you know, revisit the characters and think about, okay, what would they be doing 6 months after the book ends, or 9 months, or 12, or things like that. So they definitely still stay alive in my head a little bit.
I'm strictly here to be a hype man. Are you so excited that The Wedding Party is on the New York Times bestseller list this week?
Thank you for that. I am very excited. The Wedding Party is on the New York Times bestseller list, but it, you know, you never know what is going to happen with that. I had no idea, and I just found that out this afternoon, so that was exciting.
All right, this is the last question.
Hi, Jasmine. Hello. I just wanted to say I love your books.
Thank you.
It's been so great to be here. I just had a quick question. So one of my favorite scenes in The Proposal are when Nick and Carlos and Alex and Drew are going to go on a double date. And I laughed really loudly when Alexa and Nick looked at each other and realized that neither Drew or Carlos mentioned they were both black women. So I appreciate how you've been talking about how you don't want race to be the central point of your books, but that scene was so fascinating to me, and I was just wondering, as you were writing it, why did you make that a point to bring to the readers?
Here's, like, race is not a central part of the book, but race plays a role in all of my books, right? And so that was something I thought about partly because that is not a thing that would often occur to men to be like, oh, but we're both dating black women. You know, like, they would not have that conversation. And it was fun for me to have Alexa and Nick interact and interact in that way. And I like that you love that scene because I have heard people who are not black say, like, I didn't really understand that scene. why did they care so much? And I'm like, I know people who understood that scene. So there's certain times, like, I have had interactions like that where either, you know, you're kind of nervous about meeting someone, you don't know who it is, and you show up and you're like, oh, it's another black woman. I'm good. We're going to be good now. Or like with Alexa at, going to the wedding where she was wondering if, you know, there was going to be anyone else back there. Like, I have had those experiences where you go to a party and you're not sure if you're going to be the only one there. Sometimes you, like, I'll see another black woman in the corner of the room and you'll look at each other and be like, and you may not speak at all the rest of the party, but you just know each other's there. So those are, you know, experiences that I've had that, like, ring true to a lot of other black women, especially people who have spent a lot of time in, like, a lot of white spaces. Those are things, you know, that I think that all of my main characters would have experienced.
All right, let's give a round of applause for Jasmine.
Thank you.
And Diamond. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, we talk with Harvard University professor John Stauffer about the life and legacy of Frederick Douglass. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself. Okay.